actually?
I mean, it's debatable.
It's debatable?
They're here, but they're much.
Okay. What we are in is breach, right? Remember, we're looking at breach, and in particular, we're focusing on ordinary care, or the general standard of care, right? Because that's the one you typically see. Last class, we explored the fact that the court could say you owed a different duty, right? You owed a duty of extraordinary, the highest level of care, or they could say you owe a duty of willful wanton. But most of the time, what the judge is going to give to the jury, right, is a card that says there is a duty, and it's a duty to exercise reasonable care. That's what the jury instruction is going to go to the jury, and the jury has to decide, did this defendant breach that duty? Okay, so hopefully we all got that concept of ordinary care, right? The care of a reasonable person in the same or similar circumstances. Okay, let's make sure you got this concept. Are you negligent if you take any risk? So do you breach any time you take a risk? Come on, you can do it all together. Answer.
No.
No, it's only if you take unreasonable risks, right? So it's only if you take an unreasonable risk that we're going to say you're negligent. We create risks all the time, but liability is going to turn on you're ignoring a foreseeable risk of harm. Okay, here's the other obvious question to which you know the answer. Is the reasonable person a real person? Answer?
No.
No, they're a made up fake person, right? And actually, sometimes the law used to give them names, like John Doe, right? The reasonable man, right? That is a made up person. Okay, so the concepts we're dealing with today is when the jury is asked to say, remember they have to say credibility, but they also have to say what a reasonable person would do, right? They have to set the standard for what a reasonable person would do. What we're looking at today is what can you take into account as the jury when you refine that standard, when you say what does that standard of a reasonable person look like in this case? So you see what we're doing? The jury set is told, do reasonable person. Our question is, okay, but what can we take into account when we say what a reasonable person would do? So the first thing we know you're allowed to take into account is the same or similar circumstances, right? Because it deliberately says a reasonable person under the same or similar circumstances. So the first part on the worksheet is, what do we mean by same or similar circumstances? So, let's see. Oh, I have to wake up again. So, go in and click yes or no. See that first question on the handout I emailed to you? So, can we take into account that the defendant faced an emergency not of his own making? So when we ask what a reasonable person would do, can we take into account the fact that the defendant is facing an emergency not of his own making or her own making? Okay, well at least 25 of you can push a button. Look at that, 88%, excellent. So the answer is yes. Right, and you all found that, and actually it was in the reading left over from yesterday. Okay, so can someone tell me what the example was in the reading? Who haven't I talked to? How about Miss Hayden? Sadly, you don't have a little highlight. So you remember what the example was in the book?
Yeah, they were driving down the highway really fast, and somebody backed up. Is that the one?
Then back up, what happened?
Oh, no.
Thank you.
out signal. We're looking very brain dead. So try this. Are you supposed to change lane without signaling? Answer?
No.
Reasonable care would require that. Suppose there are crates falling off the truck in front of you. Is it reasonable care to change without stopping to signal?
Yes,
because the amount of care we expect went down. See it? Because we're allowed to take into account the circumstances.
So we'd say the amount of care they have to take under the reasonable care standard is less. See it? Yep.
So would that argue that in the case, I mean, if something, if circumstances may come about where you have to worry about yourself over other people, you would do what it takes to get out of the way. I mean, I'm trying to say that makes sense, but if a girl is coming down at you, you're kind of disregarding anything around you. You're going to do whatever you can to...
Which does it say you can disregard everything? It just says you can take reasonable care for the safety of yourself and others. So you can look at your own safety, you can look at other safety, but it's reasonable care. But we're going to allow you to do somewhat crazier things than
what
if you weren't in an emergency.
You can, like, ram somebody else off the road.
Would that be reasonable care? No, right? So notice you're still being held to the reasonable care standard. It's just we're going to recognize that the amount of care you take will actually be less because you're facing an emergency. So it doesn't say you can take no care and do whatever the hell you want. No, it just says take reasonable care in those circumstances,
i.e. facing an emergency. Okay. Can anyone think of other circumstances? So if you're driving along, should you drive 50 or 20? Okay, what circumstances would be okay if you commuted at 50 this morning versus 20? Speed limit is a separate piece of legislation. Okay, there's no speed limit on this road. Anything else? Weather conditions, can we take that into account? Yes, it says reasonable care in the circumstances. Suppose it's snowing. Do you think the defendant should take a greater amount of care or a lesser amount of care? Greater. What's the standard? Reasonable. The standard stays the same. Reasonable care in the circumstances. But if it's snowing, the amount of care you take should be higher. What external circumstances could push it down? No traffic, right? What else?
No weather.
That's a beautiful day. The road's dry, it's sunny, it's a beautiful day, there's no traffic, right? We're going to say a reasonable person could go a little faster, right? So you see, external circumstances, we can look whatever conditions the defendant's in when we measure reasonable care. Got it? Okay, there's one. Oh, yep.
What about if
so what do you think?
A reasonable person would want to get his wife to go to the hospital.
So a reasonable person in the circumstances, you could take an external factor into account. Yeah. Now I might argue you were negligent in a different way. Yeah, maybe you were at the bar or you were still finishing your paper while your wife goes into labor, and that's the reason. So notice what the exception says. An emergency not of his own making. So if the reason you guys are in a rush is because you were finishing watching TV before you decided to go to the hospital, then you don't get to count it. Like, I'm late for George! That's not an emergency that counts, okay? So I'm just qualifying your hypo. So if it's truly an emergency not of your own making, we get to count it. If you made it, you don't get to use it as an excuse. Good? Okay, there's one other type of situation. So the emergency exception comes up a lot of the time, right? You can see that in a lot of cases, the defendant might want to argue it was an emergency. The other scenario you see is called the dangerous instrumentality, right? So if you're handling a dangerous instrumentality, can we take that into account?
Answer?
Yes. Do you think it increases the amount of care a reasonable person would take or decreases?
Increases.
Can you think what counts as dangerous instrumentality?
A sword.
A sword, yes. I had one with me just this morning. Okay, what else?
A
bicycling. So that's called the dangerous instrumentality rule because courts see it a lot of the time. It's simply an example of reasonable care in the circumstances, but the ones we see all the time pick up cute names, like the emergency doctrine or the dangerous instrumentality doctrine. They just illustrate that in the circumstances. Everybody good? Okay, let's go ahead and look at the reasonable person, the second half of the formula, right? Because we have to determine what a reasonable person would do in the circumstances. So we have to ask what internal attributions or individual characteristics of an individual is the jury allowed to look at when they start saying this is what a reasonable person would do. And we have to take that awesome British case of Vaughan versus Menlove. Okay. So, who should I harass? I was harassing over there. Okay, Mr. Short, what happened? Okay, you woke up. Okay, what happened? Just facts.
Menlove was placing bales of hay near a cottage, and he kept placing it there, and eventually one caught on fire, and the fire spread to the cottages, and a lot of damage happened to the cottage, where he broke the cottage, so he caught on fire.
Okay, so the point, everybody agree? So the defendant on his land has this stack of hay. It's the fire spreads to the bar, it spreads over onto plaintiff's land and burns down plaintiff's cottages for which they sue. Everybody agree on the facts? Okay? Okay, I want to take a step back because you always start a case with injury. What's the injury?
Burned down cottages.
Physical harm to property. That counts, right? Yes! Did an element. Okay, duty. Easy or hard? Hard, easy. Hard, easy. Excellent. Good superior knowledge. Okay. People who are like, anyone's a bunch of their thinking. So the people who are saying hard are thinking what?
You're gonna take down the cage, but then easy is gonna
get down. What does it kind of look like? Okay, so do we say that worked? So that's what she did, like, oh, I was driving and I just didn't brake. Did we say that counted? No, we said you look at the whole thing, which would be doing what? Carelessly building a haystack, right? So you can't get to miss nonfeasance by saying, well, he built one, he just didn't take it down. So you're thinking this is an easy case because the negligence we're pointing to, what we were pointing to, is he negligently builds a haystack, right?
No, I think it's difficult.
Okay, so he negligently builds it, right? And you can't get to that he doesn't take it down, therefore it's nonfeasance. Okay? What does it look like? Yep.
Duty to protect.
It doesn't look like duty to protect, because we said he actively did something. Because he actively built the stack. On what? So why isn't this a landowner case?
Because they weren't on his property.
Ben, so landowner cases look like what? Change the hypo. Here's the little plaintiff. What would the fact pattern look like to be a landowner case? Right, that's a landowner case, right? I came to visit your farm and the burning haystack fell on top of me. Because then you'd be saying about the condition of the land, right? But this is an activity case, right? You engage in this dangerous activity on your land which causes harm. So we're going to see an ordinary care instruction, right? It's an easy case. So the judge is going to hand over an ordinary care. You should exercise ordinary care when you build haystacks. Just like we said, you should exercise ordinary care when you ride around on lawnmowers. Very good? So that's what we know the jury gets. What's the debate about the jury instruction? So what does the judge say about what ordinary care means, and what does the defendant want him to say? So if you look halfway down 163, what does the court say about ordinary care, and what does the defendant want him to say? Yes? Bingo. And what does that sound like? What sound is that?
Ordinary.
Yeah, it's the ordinary care sound. They want ordinary prudent person. We're like, oh, it's the ordinary care. Okay, what does the defendant want? The
defendant wants... just lost. Oh, here it is. He's going ahead and acted honestly and bona fide to the best of his own judgment.
And he ought not to be responsible because he wasn't
very smart.
Very smart, and not of the highest order of intelligence. So he wants the I'm stupid standard, right? He says we should measure it by whether I tried really hard, but I just couldn't do it. Or you see, that's what he wants the standard to be, right? Bona fide, I tried my best, but I'm not of the highest order of intelligence. You can't say I was negligent when I really tried. Everybody see what his argument is? And what does the court say? Answer is? Reasonable care, right? The reasonable person standard, okay? So this is the classic English case that adopts the reasonable person standard. Everybody should have got that the court rejects this, okay? Note one after the case tells you that when we say the reasonable person standard, we're actually talking about two significant features of that standard. So what are the two significant features? When we say reasonable man, reasonable person standard, what is significant about that standard? Yes.
The conduct was reasonably careful.
Not the right, so we look at conduct, what he actually did, not his mental state. So negligent always focuses just on, hey, there's who said, right? We don't focus on his mental attitude, right? We just ask, is his conduct negligent? Got it? What tort does that contrast with? Right, the intentional torts, where we want to know what was your attitude as well as what you did, right? Negligence, it doesn't matter if he built that because he hated you, or he was stupid, or whatever, right? Because negligence just looks at the conduct. When we ask the initial question about whether you were negligent, we look at the conduct. Okay, there's a second sense that the note points out. Yes? So the standard is in that sense subjective or objective?
It's an objective subjective. So like, that's what it says. It would compare to what an ordinary reasonable person, and then you would use another objective with a reasonable person with a defendant's attributes.
So does it have an objective component?
Yes.
So the key to the standard is we're asking a reasonable person, right? It's not subjective, right? It's objective. But the problem, which is the issue for today, is how many of the attributes of the defendant are we going to give to the reasonable person, right? Are we going to ask a reasonable Gillis, incredibly smart, or a reasonable defendant, not of the highest intellectual order? Okay, how many attributes of the defendant are we going to move over to the reasonable person? Is that a question? Because we know in circumstances we go reasonable person in all the circumstances. Do we do reasonable person with all the attributes of the defendant? Or is that our issue? So what's the answer on the first clicker box? The first clicker box we're going to look at, which is mental limitation. right? If the defendant has the mental limitation, is it part of the reasonable person test? So do we say, did you exercise reasonable care given your stupidity? Is that what we do? Do we move mental limitation over? Is it part of the reasonable person test? Yes or no? Okay, and the answer of no wins out at 72%, right? So what this case holds is you can't use the I'm just stupid excuse. We're going to hold you to the standard of a reasonable person of reasonable mental abilities. Okay, examples. So when we say mental limitation, what do we mean? What flavors of mental limitation do you enjoy? Other than exhaustion and letting go down. Okay, so what was Medlove's one? Stupid, right? Simply IQ level. Does mental limitation mean anything else? Is that the only time we're going to run this rule? Insanity, right? So we hold an insane defendant to what? To reasonable care of an ordinary, sane person. Right? So even if you have what note to be playing with? Note 9. So note 9 says that states adopt the rule uniformly that we hold an insane person to the standard of care of a reasonably sane person. Okay, so insanity, Alzheimer's, psychotic delusions, we still say you're being held to a reasonable person standard. Anything else? So there's a cute little Holmes trick. Yep.
I thought they gave an example that an Alzheimer's patient wasn't held liable for battery, but was held for negligence.
Correct. Because under negligence, we say what? The standard of a reasonably...
any reasonable person.
Bingo. So that's why they're liable for negligence, because we don't excuse them with the Alzheimer's. We hold them to a reasonable person, even though they have Alzheimer's. Okay, so let's try one other. There's a little Holmes quote in note 2. What kind of people does he talk about? See that little quote? What? Hey, so do you think we could, if you're hasty and careless, do you think we should hold you to the standard of a person who's hasty or careless, or do we ignore those attributes? We ignore those attributes. So when we say mental limitations, we mean pretty normal ones that we all have too, right? You're too hasty, you're nervous, you're easily excitable, right? We don't just mean you're completely insane, right? Or that you're really, we just mean any intellectual abilities. Good? You got it? So don't, yep.
Wait, so if someone is awkward, you ignore it, you don't?
Yeah, so we'd hold it to a reasonable person, reasonable non-awkward person. You're highly nervous, we don't care. We hold it to a reasonable person. So those are all treated as mental limitations we ignore. Good? Yes?
So even if you were incapacitated, you were so mentally ill, would you still be held to a reasonable standard? I don't know how far they go with that.
So suppose Manilov is completely insane. He thinks the only way to save the world is by burning the haystack. What standard do we hold him to? You say, I'm sorry, there's more people that go around burning haystacks your life. Suppose his mental IQ is such that he doesn't even realize what fire is. He's like, oh, nice light. Very nice light. More light. Nice. What standard do we hold him to? Reasonable person. Now your question is, how can that possibly be fair when we know he can't meet that standard? Right? It's like, hey, here's the standard. We know you can't meet it, but you have to pay. Right? How can that possibly be a good role to have when we know the defendant can't get it? I mean, here we think maybe he's faking, like, right? So how can that be? So what are the policy justifications? Okay, did you find them? And
Note 9, policy justifications for this crazy rule. Yes.
There's a list of five on the top of the page.
There is a list of lovely five. Okay, so let's see if we know what any of them mean. So give me number 1, and then see if you can tell me what it means.
The desirability of allocating losses between two innocent parties to the one who caused or occasioned the loss. They're saying that even if the defendant is completely insane and doesn't realize what they're doing, the plaintiff is even more innocent if they didn't do anything at all. So the defendant may as well pay.
Bingo. So between two innocents, right, the insane guy who can't adjust his conduct, and the plaintiff who's injured, the one who causes the trouble has to pay. Excellent. Okay, and what about number 2?
Providing an incentive to family members and other guardians of persons with mental disabilities to control the behavior of those persons.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, they want to make sure, they want to try to make sure that if people know that the person that you're caring for with a disability is going to be liable, then you're probably going to try to take more care that they don't cause damage.
Why?
Because you don't want them to pay.
Right, you don't want your inheritance to disappear, right? Crazy Aunt Uncle Harry, like with the millions, you want to make sure he doesn't commit torts so the inheritance is still there for you, right? So you want to avoid liability. Okay, 3. What does that mean?
They don't want it to be a defense because they don't want people to fake being insane.
Okay, so well, why are people going to fake being insane to get out of tort liability?
I know I ran into your car, but, oh, look, right?
Because that would lower the standard, so we're not going to allow you to fake. Okay, what's number 4?
Avoiding administrative problems that are created by requiring courts and juries to identify and assess the significance of an actor's disability.
And what does that mean? You're doing really well, so what does that one mean?
It would require them to have somebody they'd have to prove exactly how insane a person was.
Right, everybody would have to take a little IQ test. Mr. Manlow, please take your IQ test. Oh, nope, sorry, you can't use it. Right, we've worked out how stupid you are with our little test. So it's an efficiency problem. And then number 5.
Forcing persons with disabilities to pay for the damage they do if they are to live active lives.
And what does that mean?
Holding them to a standard that we hold other people to if you're going to take a risk. Then you're liable for it.
Excellent. So if you're going to live in the world and function in the world, you have to take responsibility for the harms you cause in the world. Excellent. So those are the policy reasons that we say even though a person is insane, we're going to hold them to the standard of a reasonably sane person, right? Their mental limitations aren't taken into account. Okay, you ready? Okay, let's do other types of cute people. So the next is someone with a physical limitation. Should we take that into account when we ask what a reasonable person would do? Right, so this is present. If the defendant has a physical limitation, should we take that into account when we apply the reasonable care standard? Twenty-two of you are still alive. That's a pretty good percentage. Oh, look, there's even more of you. Okay. Yes is the correct answer. So we do take physical limitations into account. Okay. So can you come up with examples of physical limitations?
The blind person.
The blind person. So what standard do we hold a blind person to? Other reasonable blind person. You hold them to the standard of a reasonable blind person. Anyone else got other physical characteristics that they'd like to share?
Heart attack.
Heart attack. That'd be a pretty major physical limitation, right?
Handicap,
right? You can't walk. You can't use an arm, right? Any of those physical limitations we take into account. Okay. So let's go back to blind, because I want to illustrate to you how it works. Suppose a visually impaired person walks into you because you cross in front of them. Okay. What standard are we holding that person to?
Reasonable blind person.
Okay. Does that increase or decrease the amount of care we expect them to take?
Decrease.
Everybody see? Because we take into account the fact they're blind and we say, okay, they were taking reasonable care. Okay? Suppose they're walking around without a stick.
What is blind stick?
Do you think that's reasonable care? So did you just decrease or increase the amount of care? Increase. So notice, don't presume that taking something into account always decreases the amount of care. It may actually increase the amount of care they're required to take. See? Okay, so let's do the heart attack one. Suppose you're driving and have a heart attack. What standard of care do we use? If you're driving with reasonable care for someone having a heart attack, that's the standard, okay?
And if there aren't any cases where we can compare to what's the next thing, like a stroke or something, right?
Say again?
Because generally you can compare to an accident that happens with other people who are attacked, correct?
So they would just, the jury would just ask themselves, did you drive as well as you could with sufficient reasonable care if someone had a heart attack? It's actually a major Ohio case where there's no liability under this rule. Because the guy was driving on the freeway in Cleveland, had a heart attack, hits and kills the other family, and they conclude no liability because he was driving with reasonable care for someone having a heart attack. So I see we do take physical limitations into account. Yeah?
So there don't have to be any other examples, it's just what the jury feels.
Oh, that's what you're asking. Yeah, that's what the jury's trying to in their mind. Remember the jury instruction, you yourself can determine what a reasonable person would do. So the jury, based on their own experience, is setting this refined standard. Right? The judge says reasonable care, and the jury's first job is to build the image of a reasonable person. Right, describe what a reasonable person would. Decide which of the characteristics can come in. Okay. Well, this is a stupid policy. Is that where you were going? Or you had a question? Okay, we'll do questions and then we'll decide. This is stupid. Yes?
Mine is policy.
Okay, good. Then I'll attack you. Yeah.
Well, with how they talked about persons with seizures wouldn't be able to not have liability. What if you were a person who your doctor told you, you're going to have a heart attack sometime, would you then be not liable because a reasonable person would?
Well, wait, what are you alleging the breach is?
That you drove, like if you crashed, that you drove.
So if I say your breach was you were driving wrong, what standard would we hold that person to?
That'd be reasonable.
A reasonable person having a?
Conditions to have a heart.
Okay, you have to pick what the breach is. So the first breach you picked was what?
Driving
while having a heart attack. What standard do we hold them to?
To another person having a heart attack.
A reasonable person having a heart attack.
So you hold that standard to a person who also would be in conditions to have a heart attack but didn't.
Oh, wait. What are you alleging the breach is now?
That you drove while being in conditions to have a heart attack.
So that's what we would point out.
Who picks the breach?
The
plaintiff's lawyer. The plaintiff's lawyer picks the breach, right? The plaintiff's lawyer is going to say, here's a breach, right? So if the plaintiff's lawyer picks, you didn't steer very well while having a heart attack, that's bad lawyering, right? Because the juror's going to say, well, no, he drove with reasonable care for someone having a heart attack. So instead, you pick as a breach what? Getting in the car, decide, bingo, getting in the car, deciding to drive when you know you're at risk of a heart attack. And then you'd have to say, well, would a reasonable person do that? And it would depend on all the facts. What facts would it depend on? Yeah, you're taking medicine, so it's a really low risk, 1% risk. Doctor said, don't drive if you have a heart attack any second from the stress of 270. Then a reasonable person would not do that, right? So everybody says it's the same thing with the blind. Like sometimes the heart condition can push it down, sometimes it can push it up. It depends what you to be smart to be a liar, right? Because you can't just go, oh, well, he crashed into me. Hey, that breach, and you've lost. You have to think, what's the breach I want to argue? Excellent. Okay, but let's pick the stupid rule. So the stupid rule we have on the table is, if someone's having a heart attack while driving, we're going to ask, were you driving for with reasonable care for someone who has a heart attack? Why are we having the opposite result for mental? Right, because we don't take mental conditions into account, but we do take physical. So why would we reach a different result? Yep. So he says, I'm going to look at these factors. That would be good, because that's why I wrote them on the board, so we could all share. Okay, when you look at them for physical, which ones are the same, which ones appear different? So you said, I think one's different. Three, he says, otherwise I pick up again. He says, there's no risk of faking. If it's physical, we're not going to have the same concern that people are faking it. That's why we reach a different conclusion. And I want to say another one is different.
It's easier to prove that that the condition would cause that negligence.
So
like
which
the
one?
Efficiency for courts and juries.
It's much easier for jurors and courts to decide if someone has a physical limitation than it is for them to diagnose a mental limitation. Especially, when was the common law coming out with these things? What case did you need? Right, they're like,
we don't know, people are crazy.
Right, they're like, oh, let's diagnose the condition, right? They're like, right? So for them, those two are markedly different for physical limitations than they are for mental. How about the others? Is this one the same? Yeah, between the two innocents. So why is the defendant innocent? He's having a heart attack, right? He's having a heart attack and driving as well as he can. Why is the plaintiff innocent? They're not doing anything. So notice that rule still applies. So the ones that are different from physical limitations are 3 and 4. Okay. Everybody good? Yep.
Would you say that? Like, that's kind of a half-half situation.
So the argument is we impose liability because we want the family to control the person. Do you think that applies in physical?
Yes, it does.
Oh, yes,
yes.
No, that's excellent. Yes, no.
Yeah.
Oh, you're in a yeah? Okay, so far we got clarity. Are you passing or playing?
I'm passing.
Okay.
Incentive just to control in general, like incentive to control yourself?
It's the family member's incentive to take care of the person, remember? Mm-hmm. So in the insane people, it was we don't want them out because then Uncle Harry's inheritance is going to be paid out. And so what do you think?
Well, then if you're not mentally competent, you're able to take care of yourself.
Well, this is physical. So do we want to encourage the family to look after people who have physical limitations? That's the question. Yep.
I would say yes because, like for instance, if you do something to your shoulder, they don't want, like if you did get surgery on your shoulder, they won't let you drive. So if you drive, you're putting your family member out there to be liable for a wreck. And so if you would want to control your family member, so you won't pass away.
So she said it's just the fact that if someone's physically disabled, do you want to step in and say, hey, family, you know, look out for this person. Don't let them be out there driving. Right? So you could argue it's exactly the same. Yeah.
Is it different because as a society we expect like family members to control mentally incapacitated people more than we do? We want physically.
So he thinks there's a different expectation that we expect families to control those who are mentally deficient, but we don't expect families to step in and control people who are physically deficient. Yeah.
I would say just the opposite. We have to take the keys sometimes from our aging parents and grandparents. Which is a very difficult thing when you have to tell your grandma, no, you're no longer allowed to drive because your eyesight's getting too bad, your reaction time.
Okay, those are 5 things and they're on the other side of the sheet. So I'm going to hold you till we flip to the elderly.
Okay.
Right? Just so hold the elderly to the other side of the sheet. Okay, one more. Yep.
I actually kind of want to argue against myself.
I feel scared. Psychotic, but good. Yeah.
But with the element number three, you know, couldn't you actually reasonably fake an injury? Because, like, think about the people that go to court and body cast and stuff like that, you know, trying to demonstrate that they were.
So he says, I think you can just as easily fake, in which case there's no different from these two. Right, we have to fake and you're going to efficiently do it. Okay, last voice.
So I also think that it's sometimes can be easy to have physical evidence of a mental illness.
Right, so today we can definitely detect Alzheimer's. Right? You can take a CAT scan and you can go, oh look, this bit of their brain is green and it's supposed to be red. Right? You're absolutely right. Today, so it might be that today in the state of medical science, we shouldn't have this distinction. Okay, awesome. That's the way the law is. And you can argue policy is wrong. Okay, let's move to us. People with superior mental knowledge and superior physical attributes, right? That's us. We're all superior by definition. It's late, woe be gone. We're all over 50%. So, mental advantage. Do we take that into account? So do we say a reasonable person with the mental advantage, or do we not take that mental advantage into account? Of you demonstrating. Oh, 31 of you all demonstrate. We'll find out. Well, 20 of you have superior mental advantage because you said yes, it is taken into account. Okay, let's do physical. We'll click in on physical and then we will. So suppose you have superior physical attributes. Do they get taken into account? Yes, at 81%. Okay, so let's make sure we understand what they are. So what would be an example of a mental advantage? What are all of you?
Smart.
Okay, anything else?
Skills.
Skills. So it's going to extend to having skills. Anything else? Training, knowledge, right? So if you have superior knowledge, I'm not just saying you're smarter, but you know stuff, right? So knowledge, IQ, intelligence, skills, all get taken into account, yep.
To go along with knowledge, I was going to say experience.
Experience, right? That's going to come into it, yep.
Isn't this just an offshoot of the professional standard of care?
No, because we're not saying they're professionals.
Rather, the professional is an offshoot of this.
You can see it that way, but there are very different roles for professionals that you use the expert standard, and we're not saying you use them over here, right? We're just saying even when you use the reasonable person standard, the jury can take account of their superior mental advantages. How about the superior physical advantages? What would that be? Strength, Captain America. Anything else? What's the example in the book? Skier, swimming, right? Right, okay, so, do you think, that was skiing, yes. Okay, what do you think the policy is for this? I mean, why, it's particularly mental advantage. You can't take mental limitation into account, but you can take mental advantage into account. Do you
think this accords with the reasonable person standard or not? Yep. I think it does accord with it in terms of a reasonable person understands the law in a better way than someone else does, and you know what is right or wrong, and a reasonable person should act towards the benefit of the law.
So he says, yeah, a reasonable person is going to use those attributes. I want to say, no, we just said, no consideration of mental condition. should I do? Why would we impose the reasonable person standard taking into account his physical superiority?
Like, to help see if he's choppy or whatever, but then if then, like, if something happens, so we have that physical to look that sort of
So we would think he should, if we simply said reasonable care, ignoring your superior attributes, what could he do? That's completely fair. And suppose we just do reasonable care. How fast does he have to swim out there?
Faster than reasonable person.
Yeah, the wimpy speed the rest of us can do. Does he have to like use all his powers?
No.
No, right? Everybody sees that the law says no, you have to use whatever attributes you have. A reasonable person wouldn't say, well, I'm driving and I've got super reflexes, but I won't break to a regular person. Right? No, we say you have to use whatever attributes you have, whatever superior attributes you have, either physical or mental. So see why the law thinks a reasonable person would use whatever advantages they have. Yep?
So if you're holding them to their own standard, basically, then saying that they have to use to the best of their ability, why is it okay to say that someone who is less capable physically or mentally isn't supposed to be kept at that standard? Like someone who's mentally incapacitated, that's the best of their ability, but someone who's above the standard, they have to be even more.
She said, here, why is there a no in the first box? This yes. Why is there a no in that first box? Yes? Yeah.
I would just argue that the person who, like the law, I mean, the person who's not sitting in the law room and has a chance to understand the law hasn't given that opportunity to know it, so they're not expected to know it. If you're not as big as me, you don't have the opportunity to lift something that's 70 pounds while I can, then you shouldn't be held to that same standard.
Right, but we hold you to the lifting standard. We hold that we say, oh, a wimpy person is only held to a wimpy person standard. But mentally we say, no, you're held to a mentally competent standard. So see what's so weird about that? So those were our policy reasons. So why is it we think that mentally, those mental advantage, those policy reasons don't run?
Well, couldn't it also be that we hold them to a higher standard? Like, I'm thinking of a nuclear scientist in a nuclear plant. We hold them to a higher standard to know what's going on at that point.
So we hold them to a standard of a reasonable...
A reasonable nuclear scientist.
Given their...
expertise.
No, if you do expertise, so you want to be careful that you don't push them over into professional, right? So you could push them over to professional, right? But if you're not in a, quote, learned profession with training and skills, so if you're a person, you actually push over into a professional. So suppose your nuclear scientist is cleaning out his garage, right? So he's not acting as a professional, right? But he realizes, oh my goodness, given those batteries and the plant compost and the drip of water, that would explode. And now the rest of us would be like, oh shit, it's a mess, right? Because of his superior knowledge, he goes, oh my goodness, blah, 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 and blah, blah, and blah, blah. Okay? What does the law say? Does he have to use that superior knowledge?
Yes,
the law says you have to use that superior knowledge. But on the other hand, if they're extraordinarily stupid, so every one of us looks in the garage and goes, really? You're storing gasoline under the car? Right? Every one of us looks at it and says, that's stupid, but they don't realize it. What standard do we hold them to? Reasonable person with a common level of intellect. So see the difference in treating it? So why? Yep.
Isn't it because if you have a mental limitation, that makes you dangerous to others, so we hold you to a higher standard than you actually are? But if you have a physical advantage or mental advantage, that doesn't make you dangerous to others, so we hold you to
So you think people with physical and mental advantages are less likely to be negligent?
Yep.
Okay, that is a negligent choice. Go try that. Go get that. Hey, I never heard that. You can try it. Try it, yeah?
They're both like beneficial to society.
So he wants to say it's beneficial to society.
That's kind of what
you were thinking of saying. It's like people's exams. Well, I was going to write that. Yeah. Okay. Notice this other one? What don't we think people with superior intellect will do? They would. The question is, do they really fake it? Like, hey, I'm really, really smart. What does that lead them to? More responsibility. So there's not an incentive to fake it. See that? There's not an incentive to fake it because it's going to increase your exposure. So therefore, maybe it is that we don't fear fakers. Maybe the whole policy difference is we don't fear fakers. We do fear the passage of time, however. Awesome. Okay. So these are pretty weird rules. What's interesting about them is they're so contradictory, but courts are like, oh yeah, those are the rules. The ancient British people came up with them and we love them. Okay, so let's do intoxication. It's not in your book, but you should be able to predict. What do you think with intoxication? So I went to the FBA bar review and I drove home with all reasonable care, someone who had 5 gin and tonics. Can we take it in to see and now you know the answer? No, right? Only 16, well, the other 5 of you just don't drive home near me. Okay? So voluntary intoxication, you don't get to take into account. You can't say I drove really well for someone who was completely wasted, right? We'll hold them to a reasonably sober person. Okay, let's flip over the page and do taking grandma's keys away. The elderly. So what is the role about the elderly? Do we hold them to the care of a reasonably old person? What's the answer? I don't know, there was a note that headed elderly.
I mean, it didn't really go into too much depth, but it said a few courts have taken that argument into consideration since youth is also taken.
So what would a few courts indicate to you?
That yes, it is a factor that can take it.
And most courts do?
No, actually, so no.
There you go. So in the majority of courts, there is no special role for being old. Right? So if grandma is driving her car and runs into you, we hold her to a reasonable person regardless of age. Okay? We do not take simply that your age is into account. Anyone do some good lawyering and say, but we would take this into account. Go back to the attributes. We're just running the regular reasonable person. Right. Well, which ones count? Because you think they're...
Because you can compare it to a reasonable person.
So you can take into account any physical attributes grandma has. So grandma is physically weaker. She can't get on the wheel. She can't push the brake. So the question is, are reflexes physical or mental? They're probably physical, right? Probably just physically you can't react. But what can't you take into account when you're working out whether grandma was driving with reasonable care? Mental limitations, right? So notice you run the regular reasonable person standard and you just have to look whether she has physical or mental limitations because they're going to play out differently. Got it? How about the fact that women are superior in almost every possible way? So can we take that into account? Are all us women held to a higher standard, the standard of a reasonable woman, rather than just a regular dude? What has court said?
Answer?
No, they tend to have this generic reasonable person standard, right? So if you want to argue, but we're all smarter, does that get taken into account? No, you said the right thing. You went, why does it get taken into account? Because it's a mental advantage, right? So if you actually prove that women are smarter, you would take that into account and say, was this individual living up to her mental advantage, right? You wouldn't, if you think women are dumber, you would not take that mental disadvantage in, right? So you play with the regular roles, male or female. It's very sad that we didn't get to any of the hypos. Never mind. Okay, go your reasonable person ways. Remember that voluntary intoxication prosecution, even when you've handed in your paper, does not get you off the reasonable person standard. And on Monday, we'll do kids and we'll do the hypos.
Why? What's Monday?
When we get to kids.
They are.
It's just a reasonable person. And it looks just like that individual. So, for instance, you can have a woman who wasn't as strong. So you hold her.
I should have called
both.
Right.
You were love that.
Yeah, right? So, for instance, if the argument was like,
hey, Celine.
And I am on your side. I really care about you. They have
checking, got homework for tomorrow.
Why
You don't have a class next week. You can still come and do that.
That's awesome.
So, my hope is that it may be that.
Oh, no, this is the first.